Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. This for your SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired on June the 1st, 2012. Jake, back on May 29th in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Jake and I come to you guys each and every Saturday. Well, we have in the past couple of Saturdays, but there's been vacations and emergency surgeries and all kinds of stuff kind of thrown in there. But normally, we come to you guys every Saturday with this all-access audio review of SmackDown. But it's not the only audio we bring to you here on .net. However, the vast majority of our audio is exclusively for our members. Jason Powell does a WWE Raw breakdown each Monday night. Jake Barnett and Will Pruitt get together on Wednesdays for the .NET Countdown. Will Pruitt also comes along usually on Fridays with a TNA Impact Wrestling Breakdown. I also do an audio slant. It kind of floats on days of the week. I just kind of find some things that I like to talk about for that week and break them out and look at them from a higher angle. Jason Powell comes along on Fridays and does his Q&A audio where members can ask him both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. And Jason and I get together every Thursday for our flagship show. We call it .NET Weekly, the news review show. We look at all the news of the week. This week, we only had about 7 or 8 topics, yet still managed to go a little over 3 hours talking about Randy Orton's suspension, Chris Jericho's suspension, Impact Wrestling going live, the Dixie Carter conference call, just a lot of stuff going on each and every week. We break it down for you in .NET Weekly. If you want access to all of those audio shows, plus be able to see the site on the ad-free version and have access to our .NET member forum and .NET member blog page, all you got to do is head on over to ProWrestling.net right now if you're listening on iTunes. Click on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up page, and we will get you started. $7.50 gets you 30 days, $5.50 a month if you take the annual option, saves you $24 over the course of the year. Lots of stuff going on all the time, lots of things coming up. It's summertime, and sometimes there's a lull during the summer, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be that way right now. There's just a lot of things going on with suspensions, and so guys are going to be moving around, and the indies are starting to really kick into high gear this time of year and start putting on lots of pay-per-views, lots of new things coming. So a good time to sign up to be a .NET member. But this one is free for you guys each and every Saturday. Jake and I breaking down SmackDown, and I'm going to bring in Jake right now. Jake, we haven't done this in a couple of weeks. Again, I had vacation last week, and I think the week before that was when I was out for surgery. And it's been kind of a crazy couple of weeks, and we haven't had a chance to do this. But, you know, first SmackDown back for me from vacation, and while it wasn't a great SmackDown, I didn't think it was a terrible SmackDown either. But real quick, let's get your general thoughts on the show as a whole.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of in the same boat. I kind of felt like it was kind of a mediocre, middle-of-the-road show. I mean, there was a couple of pretty good matches, you know, that went for a good period of time. And, you know, there, as always, there are a few eye-roller moments, and then, you know, the rest is kind of filler. And that's pretty much what we saw here tonight. I mean, it was, you know, a few feuds got sent towards the pay-per-view, but for the most part, you know, the show was carried by those two main event matches, and they were pretty good. So, you know, it wasn't a phenomenal show, but, you know, it was competent. It kind of carried along pretty quickly, so it was worth watching for me.
For those who haven't heard, of course, I guess you could say the number two babyface on SmackDown, Randy Orton, suspended for 60 days for what's being called his second wellness violation. There's certainly lots of dispute about that going on. You get all those details on the main page if you haven't heard, but Randy Orton out for 60 days, and below him, there really wasn't a number three babyface in the company, at least on the SmackDown side. Sheamus is the world champion. Randy Orton arguably is the number two because Sheamus was the world champion. Now he's gone. And so I'll ask you the question that Jason asked me yesterday in .NET Weekly, which is, who do you think replaces Randy Orton in that spot on SmackDown?
Well, maybe Christian, I suppose, would have to be the guy to fill in that role temporarily, at least. Otherwise, you know, it does look like they're starting the process of maybe turning Dolph Ziggler, and he could probably end up being a fixture on the SmackDown brand as a babyface if they're going to turn him. You know, if they don't, with Ziggler, I guess Christian's just kind of my default since he's the Intercontinental Champion. He still is, on the SmackDown roster page and whatnot. He would backfill that role, but I guess they haven't really been doing much with him. They didn't do much with him tonight either. So your last would be my default, but I can't think of anybody else that jumps to mind.
Yeah, we're seeing how thin the roster is at all the different levels and how poor of a job WWE has done in the past couple of years of setting up a good hierarchy within the roster. You've got the top two or three guys at the top, and then you've got a huge drop-off, and you've got some what I'm calling the kind of sort of stars there in the middle, your Cody Rhodes, your Christians, and those guys are kind of floating around in the middle. And then there's just kind of everybody else. There's a couple, you got your new guys that haven't been around enough to really fall anywhere. And so, like your Damian Sandows, your Rybacks, and, your Antonio Cesaros, those guys who are getting wins and looking good, but they're not really beating anybody of quality. You've got the enhancement talent that's sitting around Tyson Kidd, Heath Slater, Ezekiel Jackson, those group. And there's not a great hierarchy. There's no real ladder to climb. It's just kind of three different shelves, and those shelves are miles apart from each other. I'm kind of happy this is happening a little bit. I'm not happy that Chris Jericho was suspended, for those who don't know, suspended for an incident involving the Brazilian flag. He's suspended for 30 days. I think he's got 21 days left. He's counting down on Twitter. If you're not following Jericho, it's pretty funny him doing his countdown. But he's got about 21 days left on his suspension. Randy Orton, 60 days, just starting. So I'm not happy those guys are suspended, but I'm happy WWE is kind of up against the wall here a little bit, and they can see what kind of damage they've done to create these holes. I mean, if you think about it, they had to put a WWE title match on SmackDown just to fill out the card. There was nothing else to do when you look at who all wrestled tonight. If you take that CM Punk, Kane, and Daniel Bryan match off of the card, what could you have possibly put there that would have made sense?
Not a whole lot, really. I mean, you had, Bryan was involved in the main event because he's involved with the WWE title at the moment. Del Rio was the only really major guy that was kind of left not doing much. He was in that opening segment talking, and then he made the match between Sheamus and Ziggler that took place later on. But he was the only guy that was really idle as far as in-ring tonight. So I don't know what you do there. I mean, that's really, they're at a serious deficit, as far as talent goes. I mean, they got Cesaro, who they advertise is coming back next week, and they have Dean Ambrose, who has been wrestling dark matches at WWE Raw and SmackDown taping. So, and they have people they can bring up to fill these spots, but they got a lot of work to do to make take these guys seriously enough to buy them in main events. So it is a serious talent deficit, not necessarily, just Raw talent terms, but they don't have a lot of people that they've built up as credible challengers to any of these major titles. So it's definitely a tough situation to be in, but one that does have a lot of opportunity on the flip side. So I hope they do take advantage of it.
Yeah, now you're right. They have a lot of Raw talent. I mean, this might be, and I'm sure it's arguable, but as far as if you look at FCW, what FCW's got sitting there waiting to be called up and what's on the roster right now, it might be one of the most talented times in WWE history, at least as far as in-ring work goes. You've got, got Tyler Black and a.k.a. Seth Rollins and Chris Hero, a.k.a. Cassius Ohno, and all these guys, Dean Ambrose, who you mentioned, who wrestled as Jon Moxley in the Indies, and all these guys who are sitting down there who are just great in-ring people. But you're right, there's great Raw talent, but they haven't made these guys credible threats yet. And, as we talk about some of the things that are going on in this show, I question some of the ways they're doing some of that. But quickly, before we go through the entire show, just your thoughts on the John Laurinaitis announcement of the triple threat, Kane being added to the WWE Championship match at No Way Out, so it'll be Kane versus Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk for the WWE Championship. No other stipulation announced as of yet. There was a rumor for a while that everything at No Way Out was going to be cage matches. That's not been announced yet. Certainly Cena and Big Show was going to be a cage match. But, what do you think of the triple threat? Or what do you think of the triple threat announcement? And what did you think of the way John Laurinaitis announced the triple threat?
Well, Laurinaitis he did the whole thing from his motorized cart, and he didn't really even talk in complete sentences, really. And he had that really, the grin on his face from, an idiot's grin. So the actual announcement itself was just the lamest, wrestling announcement that I've ever seen. There was no forcefulness to it. The crowd, you know, took at least 15 seconds after he stopped talking to even react to it. I mean, there was just no excitement generated by the announcement itself. But, you know, and I'm not terribly excited about the Kane addition necessarily from a storyline sense. I don't think he adds a whole lot here. But I think the goal is to either have one of either have Brian win the title or have Brian, you know, not win the title and have neither of the champion or challenger, the traditional one, lose the match. I think Kane is just the fall guy here, the patsy for whatever storyline they want to set up for SummerSlam with Punk and Brian, you know, if that's how far they want to take this. And he'll just serve that purpose. Even WWE kind of acknowledged that he's the middleman here between this this more traditional feud. So I think they can put on a competent match, but I'm not excited about it from a storyline sense, since it really just kind of feels tacked on.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you pretty much took the words out of my mouth when it comes to Kane. He's, whether you think, I tend to lean to the fact that this means Brian wins the championship, but they seem pretty excited about having CM Punk as the champion for a long time. They think that that's doing great things for the championship. Just Jason and I have discussed this in great detail about how, you know, yeah, it is, except for the fact it's always the second match on the card. It's always below whatever John Cena's doing. So not to rehash that there, but you know, I can see this going either way, but I think we're in agreement that no matter who wins that match, the goal is, A, to extend the feud an extra month by not having either one of those guys lose, and that, B, Kane is going to do the job, come No Way Out. There's just probably no way around that. And yet the announcement was, I struggle to think of a less exciting announcement than that. He rolled out on his scooter, and verbatim he said, the WWE Championship match at No Way Out will now be a triple threat, people power. And I'm going, what in the hell? What exactly? I mean, that was it. That was all it was. He had that goofy grin on his face, as you pointed out. It was almost like he was high and, oh, crap, I've got to go say lines. And I'm not accusing Laura Knight of doing drugs. I'm just saying it came across that way that he, you know, like he was stoned, and he went running out there and was like, oh, yeah, it's a triple threat, woo, and ran back to the back. It was the worst. The only thing I could think of that had less crowd reaction in recent memory was the HBK announcement of being the special guest referee, but that was announced during a really tense moment. He was in Hunter's face, and they, you know, the way they did it, it wasn't a good setup for them to do it that way, but it wasn't, you know, at least you're like, okay, well, that just got overshadowed by the tension between them more than anything else. This was just, you know, got sort of moment. It was just a really strange way to close the show, and AJ in the ring and Punk kind of eyeballing her. Just, I don't know. I could not think of a worse way to announce that triple threat match than the way they did it. But it is a triple threat match. I think we agree. It's there to extend that feud, and I'm okay with that in that sense. I'm not a big fan of Kane being involved either, but I like the way they got him there. Usually these triple threat matches, they just find a third guy and throw him in for no reason. At least with this, they told a story of both guys kind of manipulating Kane a little bit to be involved in some way. And so, you know, I mean, I at least like the way they got him there, if, you know, once you get past the fact that Kane's there. Like, I don't like that. But, okay, he's going to be there. So, hey, at least you got him there in some sort of logical way instead of just, oh, crap, we got to do something with Kane. Put him in the WWE title match. Yeah, that'll make sense. So I does that make sense? I mean, do you like how they got him there at least, and that he's been kind of this pawn? I mean, they made a big deal of that last night in the match with Punk, that Kane has been kind of the pawn between the two of them, and I at least appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, that part of it was done pretty well. I thought they had you know, them use him as the pawn, you know, back and forth, and you know, he manages to get the better of both of them, you know, at the end of this show with a double choke slam. So, I mean, the way the whole thing kind of flowed together makes sense. I mean, I just don't think the Kane character necessarily will interact very well with the Punk and Brian characters. You know, if they have to go out and talk to each other, you know, it's just going to be kind of brutal because I don't think they're compatible in that way, you know. We'll definitely see an interesting match. I mean, I think Kane is one of the, you know, more underrated big men in, you know, in the WWE, and I think, you know, Punk and Brian are excellent too. So I expect the match at the pay-per-view to be well put together. I'm just not all that enthused about listening to them have to talk back and forth for a couple of weeks here.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense to me. So, well, let's take this thing apart. We start at the top of the show. Again, this was taped on May 29th in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and they opened with a video of the hype, the WWE Championship match. They said it was the first time in 4 years the championship had been defended on SmackDown. On Raw, they said it was the first time in 8 years, so once again, WWE just makes up history as they go along. We got our standard opening video in pyro. Josh Matthews, Michael Cole, and Booker T chipped in on commentary. Lillian Garcia introduced World Heavyweight Champion Sheamus, who came out to the ring wearing his new shirt. Sheamus said that after Alberto Del Rio became the number one contender last week, he came out and congratulated him in the only way he could, or in the best way he could think of. He showed video of Del Rio winning that match last week and then Sheamus attacking him and standing over him to close last week's show. Sheamus said that people have questioned him on his actions, but he wanted to let Del Rio know that he had been pampered and waited on all his life, but he would not be kissing Del Rio's behind because he would be too busy kicking it. He said, money could buy you a lot of things, but it can't buy you the World Heavyweight Championship. David Otunga's music hit at that point, and Otunga comes to the ring. Sheamus kind of gave him an introduction and asked him how his head was after he kicked it off a couple of weeks ago. Otunga said he wasn't there for jokes. He was there for John Laurinaitis. Otunga said before he wanted to, he said anything, he wanted to play some video evidence, and they showed video of Sheamus charging to the ring on Raw and kind of bashing into the Big Johnny. I guess it was 2 weeks ago. Otunga said that he said the evidence he thought was pretty clear. He had come out last week and asked for an apology from Sheamus, but Sheamus had refused. So this week he was out there demanding an apology from Sheamus. He was ordering Sheamus to apologize. Sheamus said that this wasn't Starbucks, and you can't order him to do anything like he orders his coffee. He said if Otunga tried to order him around, Otunga would be picking his coffee cup out of his ass for 2 weeks, which I thought was a weird line. He said if Laurinaitis wanted an apology, he should come out and ask for one face-to-face. At that point, Del Rio's music hit. Del Rio came out in his car, no Ricardo Rodriguez yet. He said that Otunga was wasting his time looking for an apology from a peasant like Sheamus. He called him a hooligan, which is also what's on Sheamus' shirt. He said that people like Sheamus end up working for people like he and Otunga. That Otunga should not worry, he told Otunga not to worry, but Sheamus would be very sorry soon because after No Way Out, he would no longer be the world champion. Otunga said he appreciated that, but Sheamus needed a more immediate punishment and that Laurinaitis had given him permission to give the right to pick Sheamus' opponent. They shook hands and smiled at Sheamus. Del Rio was very happy by this. Sheamus said, you know what, I am sorry, Otunga. Then he kicked David in the head, which bashed him into Del Rio. Del Rio rolled to the floor. Sheamus squatted over Otunga and said, "But I'm not sorry for what I did to John Laurinaitis. I'm sorry in advance for kicking you." And then he looked up at Del Rio, who had backed up the ramp and told him to never trust a hooligan. And we went commercial from there with a high-percent Cara. Del Rio has been damaged so much by WWE that it's hard to take him serious on a certain level. This was okay mic work from everybody involved. There's nothing special, when I wrote the hit list, I neither gave it a hit nor a miss. It was just kind of there for me. But, you know, I think the problem here is not so much anything that anybody did in the ring. It's just that it's hard to take Del Rio serious because they've cut his legs out from underneath him so many times.
Yeah, I think, they haven't really hit the stride with the Sheamus character that they wanted either. You know, I do enjoy his ring work immensely. I think he's one of the better talents. I don't really enjoy the cadence that he uses in the ring. I mean, he's a decent babyface when they give him good material to go out there and talk with. But for the most part, he's still kind of channeling that whole Lucky Charms thing that I really don't like. I guess they're trying to transition him now into being, you know, kind of a, kind of reminds me of the Saturday Night Live skit Scottish Soccer Hooligans, where he's just, you know, this rough and tumble, take no prisoners kind of guy, which is fine. But I think they have to make him a little bit more serious than he is, you know, to be a real baby face to carry the company, and I hope they get there. And I think you're absolutely right about Del Rio. He's damaged, and he really hasn't, you know, broken out of the shell of the Mexican aristocrat thing. He still relies too heavily on the stereotypes that surround his character. He doesn't really verbally, you know, get much past that, you know, that structure that he's kind of been built around. But you know, the segment was fine. I mean, nobody, you know, gave a bad verbal performance, but I'm not charged up by either of the characters involved. And you know, Otunga is just so dry. You know, he's just like Laurinaitis as a character. You know, he just goes out there and says his segment. He doesn't really invoke any emotions because he doesn't really use any in his speech patterns. So it was an okay opening segment, but it didn't really get me charged up.
Yeah, that's fair. Sheamus is at least not out there talking about his Uncle Barney anymore. So, I mean, there's that improvement.
Right.
You're right. He's still kind of sort of channeling that Lucky Charms character. They've pushed him more to this soccer ruffian than hooligan than they have away from, you know, kiss the Blarney Stone kind of guy that he was before. So there's some improvement there, but I see what you're saying too about Sheamus. Sheamus has not found the stride that he needs, and Del Rio has had it cut out from underneath him. And so what you have are kind of two lukewarm characters. Sheamus is way over. I mean, the guy gets a great pop, and I love his in-ring work and all those things. But yeah, as a character, he's kind of just kind of lukewarm right now. And certainly the same way for Del Rio. I think they're moving in opposite directions. Del Rio has come down to lukewarm, whereas Sheamus is still trying to find his big stride from his babyface turn. And, he's getting kind of that mindless cheer to some degree, not picking on people who cheer for him, just that kind of, he's a babyface and he's a big guy and he beats up the bad guys. And so he's a great character in that sense. But as far as a rounded character, he's not very much of one. He's kind of Hulk Hogan-ish in a way. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, he's definitely got that feel to him. I mean, he's definitely not very varied in what he talks about. You know, he doesn't do, like you mentioned, you know, he doesn't go out there and tell, you know, the Irish limericks about his family anymore. But he definitely, you know, says a lot of the same things over and over again. I never get the impression that his feuds are tailored to the individuals he's fighting, or feuding with. It just feels like they're, you know, they cut out the name from the last promo and insert the new name that he's feuding with. And it never really feels personal with him. And I guess that's why I have a harder time getting into him. It's not that I don't enjoy his ring work. I think he's phenomenal. But I just wish the character would match what we see from him weekly in the ring.
Yeah, ironically, the best feud he's had since turning babyface has been this little short one he had with Randy Orton over the past few weeks. But alas, Orton is out for 60 days, so we can't go back to that either. After commercial, we get the re-debut, the return 7-month injury. Since Carl was out, he debuted a new red and white, a little bit of yellow gear, but still the same as someone, I think, as our correspondent put when he sent in the SmackDown spoilers, the same stripper lighting. And no trampoline this time, Jake. Whenever he made his entrance, he slid under the ring and then did a little springboard hop off of the second rope. But probably a good idea getting rid of that trampoline. He had a lot of problems with that, didn't he?
Yeah, for a guy that's probably going to be tasked with being on Raw now, they're going to need to eliminate the high-frequency botch spots from his act. And I think they're starting to do that.
And after Sin Cara made his entrance and led to our first match of the night, Sin Cara defeating Heath Slater in 2 minutes and 24 seconds. Kind of your basic semi-squash match here. Sin Cara starts out strong. Heath Slater comes back. Sin Cara comes back, hits a couple of really fancy-looking moves, and then wins with his tilt-the-whirl face crusher, I guess is what we'll call it. He kind of pins the arm. After he spins around, he pins the arm behind the back, and his opponent takes a face bump. That's his finisher. Not sure what he's calling it right now. I wrote in my report, and I got some hate mail for it, and that's how I know vacation's over, because the hate mail's rolling in, but I wrote the, you know, I figured out what it was about Sin Cara that I didn't like, and maybe that was a poor choice of words when I said what I didn't like. I think what I meant more than didn't like is I figured out what his problem in WWE is, and that he's still wrestling very much so a lucha style. So many of his spots depend upon people standing and watching him flip while he holds their hand or whatever. They just have to, it doesn't fit the WWE style. Now, that doesn't mean that he should, you know, dump what he's doing and try to become JBL or somebody like that, but you have to look at, you know, Rey Mysterio, who took a lucha background and turned it into, you know, morphed it into that WWE style and has been wildly successful with it. You have to look at guys like, you know, just recently, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, who have wrestled a vastly different style in Ring of Honor than they did, than they do now in WWE, and had to adapt what they do to the WWE style. Chris Jericho, huge star in Japan before coming over. Yes, he was in WCW as well, but also did some lucha stuff, had to learn to adapt what he did to the WWE style to be successful. So, you know, to a large degree, everybody comes from somewhere, but when you're in WWE, you're expected to wrestle the WWE style. And I don't think he's there yet, and it'll get some oohs and ahs for a little while, but I think that fan base is eventually going to end up just like it was when he got injured. Nobody seemed to care about Sin Cara. They were past the oohs and the ahs. They realized it was a spot fest. It was a stunt show to some degree. And, you know, his moves were still nice to see, but you knew it was set up, and that kind of makes it hard to suspend disbelief when it's put in with everything else around it on the show. And I think that's something he needs to work on. But maybe I'm off base here, Jake. What do you think?
Well, I guess to clarify, I think that finisher was called La Mystica when he was in Mexico, and he used to finish it with a Fujiwara arm bar. That's why he kind of holds the arm on the way down. But they don't have him doing that in WWE for whatever reason. But I think that was one of his original finishers when he wrestled commonly in Mexico. But yeah, I'm with you. You know, I sent you a message last night right after that segment was over on the show, and you know, it said that he still kind of feels like a guy that's out of place in WWE, and I think that's the case. You know, he just hasn't really adapted his style, you know, with what WWE generally expects. And I mean, they definitely feel like they're committed to him. I mean, he had quite a few backstage problems before he got injured, and then he's been out for quite an extended period of time. And maybe it's just by virtue of how thin the roster is right now that they're bringing him back with a more elaborate introduction than they do people who normally come back from injury. But it definitely feels like a re-debut for him. And, you know, it doesn't seem like he grew much in his absence. I mean, this match was wrestled clean. He didn't have a whole lot of botched spots and whatnot. But it definitely felt like the same type of Sin Cara matches we saw when he first debuted. I guess it would be probably a year ago or something like that. So, you know, I'm not terribly excited about his future if this, you know, if this is what we're going to continue seeing for him. It just doesn't seem like he's picked up enough of the mat wrestling stuff to combine, you know, the styles into something that WWE would want to push past, you know, the mid-card or wherever he is going to land right now. So he's definitely got some work ahead of him, and I hope he can accomplish it, because I really did like, you know, a lot of his work, you know, as a luchador. But it definitely isn't, you know, he's not in Mexico City anymore, so yeah, I think he has to adapt a little bit better than he has, and hopefully he can accomplish that. But it doesn't seem like he's really picked up much since his absence.
Yeah, and that's kind of the key there too. Is it's not, you know, there's nothing wrong with the lucha style. I enjoy the lucha style, but you know, when you're watching a lucha style, you know, show from top to bottom, everything looks the same. When you're watching a WWE show, and then right in the middle of it for about 2.5 minutes, you get a lucha match, it just stands out, and not in the good way. It just screams, it's wildly different.
You get half a lucha match. That's the problem. I mean, he's not wrestling luchadors.
Yeah.
So they look even more, because they don't, a lot of the WWE guys have no idea how to stay active when he's doing, because the Mexican luchadors will, you know, will actually sell and do interesting things while he's flipping around, you know, and doing the arm bars and the arm drags and whatnot. But, I mean, these guys just kind of stand there. You know, they don't do anything. So it looks really out of place. You know,
yeah, that's a good point.
It's, so you get half a lucha match with a, you know, and the half that's doing the lucha work is excellent, but, you know, these guys just don't, they aren't adapting to his style, and he isn't adapting to theirs, so it just kind of looks like an alien life form out there in the ring, and it doesn't really work. So I hope they can get it fixed. I mean, maybe they can put him against some opponents that are more familiar with his style. Not clicking for me.
That's a great point. It really is. And that's kind of been my problem. I noticed it last night, Slater just kind of standing there while he was, I think he was doing something springboard off the ropes or whatever. Slater's just watching it. I'm like, what is, you know, you got to do something, dude. Move around, stagger, something. Jeez. But, we'll see what happens with Sin Cara. I just kind of wanted to clear that up a little bit. Dislike was probably a poor choice of words, and that's my fault. But it is a liability for him. After commercial, we had another new guy, Damian Sandow, who made his ring introduction for our second match of the night. Damian Sandow defeating Ezekiel Jackson at 1 minute and 37 seconds. The bell rang on this, and Sandow, you know, faked off, asked for a mic, and said, once again, I am across the ring from an ignoramus, and I will not be participating. You're welcome. He did his "you're welcome" bid. He started to leave. Zeke dragged him back in, closed him a few times. Sandow snapped on him. Hit some knee lifts, had a nice rolling, actually I guess he didn't, it wasn't a rolling side Russian leg sweep, it's just that's his side Russian leg sweep. He hits it and then he rolls through, did an elbow drop that after a little bit of flair that worked well with his gimmick, and then of course hit his straight jacket net breaker for the win. We still don't have a name for his finisher yet either. There's not a whole lot to say here for this guy. He's going to be on this, you know, kind of squash pattern for a while they continue to build him up, and I'm, you know, it is what it is. He's a guy I really want to see in a feud, probably sooner than anybody else, because I think his gimmick with his, you know, smarter than you, better than you attitude really needs a foil of some sorts to really get over. It's, you know, it's one thing to go out there and insult Ezekiel Jackson. It's another thing to go out there and insult somebody that, you know, has some standing. So I look to see him, or I want to see him in a feud, probably sooner than anybody else, just because I think that gimmick needs, a steady feud to really get over. But am I the only person who thinks his pink trunks look absolutely ridiculous?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of them either. I guess, you know, Randy Savage wore pink trunks, and he was a badass. So I guess you can't crap on it too much, but it seems kind of a little ridiculous considering, you know, the character that he's portraying. But I think you're right. He does need a foil. I mean, he does need a foil. I was thinking Zack Ryder was the first guy that came to mind for me, guy who has some credibility, who was kind of a doofus. Somebody who's, he's a baby face, could probably play pretty well off of Sandow's character, who would probably have a good time ripping into him. So that was what first came to mind for me. I don't know what came to mind for you.
Yeah, Ryder's a good one. I don't know that I necessarily had anybody in mind. It was just one of those things where, you know, if he came out and he did this, and I was like, okay, I mean, it works, and it does okay, and it allows us to, you know, see what he does in the ring and whatnot, but really for that gimmick to reach its highest expectations, he needs a character that he could stand against and just go, look at this fool, and really berate the guy over and over and over and over to really get underneath people's skin and become that heel that, you know, you have to remember that a heel is a guy that you want to see get beat up, and he has the, you know, the built-in gimmick. I mean, this gimmick is made for people to pay to see get beat up, and it's not the color pink that bothers me so much about his type. It's just when he wears that really, you know, deep blue robe, and he's got the towel wrapped around him, and he's got this kind of hierarchy thing, and then he pulls it off, and it looks just it's that hot pink, and you're like, I don't know, it doesn't flow. It's like when the robe comes off, there's this moment where the gimmick is broken a little bit, and you're like, why is he wearing pink? Maybe it's just me. My biggest fear when I see his character is that he turns into Lanny Poffo's genius character somewhere down the line and becomes this, you know, almost joke character to some degree. And when I see the pink, that reminds me You know, that kind of screams it to me more than anything else. But I like the idea of Zack Ryder. That would be someone, like I said, who's got some credibility, who can be a good doofus for him to make fun of. And probably looking at him, they could probably be very good in the ring. I mean, Sandow looks to have serious skills in the ring, when I say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he looks sharp whenever he's out there. I mean, we haven't seen him in an extended match yet. And, you know, I went back and watched some of his SBW matches on YouTube. And, you know, he does seem like he's made progress since what I've seen. You know, he looks a lot sharper now that he's been called up than he did in some of those FCW matches. So I'm interested to see what he can do when he's given a little bit more time and somebody, you know, somebody more interesting to feud with. I think he has some future in front of him.
We cut backstage to Ricardo Rodriguez, who's he was talking to Del Rio in Spanish. No idea what he was saying here. Del Rio finally told him to be quiet, let him think. Dolph Ziggler walked in at that moment and made his case for being Sheamus' opponent. He said that after he was done with him, Del Rio could be assured that he would beat him in No Way Out. Del Rio said, "I'm going to beat him no matter what, but you got it. You're going to face Sheamus." They shook hands, and Ziggler left. And then we got a Ryback video tease. You know, not a whole lot to say here. There was kind of a basic announcement for Ziggler. But I have to admit, at that moment, I was pretty excited because it's Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler in a match, and you knew that was going to be good.
Yeah, and I like what they're doing with Ziggler. I think, you know, he kind of started the process of a character evolution on Monday by, you know, declaring himself too good for continuing to lose. And, you know, I think that continued well on tonight's show. You know, he definitely looked a lot more confident, and, you know, he wasn't with Big E in this segment, so... I'm thinking they're trying to move him along and hopefully upward. But I was definitely excited about him and Sheamus having a match together, because I think they're two of the best you know, workers in WWE right now.
We get a Ryback video teaser and then a commercial break, and afterwards we've got two guys that combined weigh maybe as much as Zeke's left leg, as I put in my report. Ryan Shelton and Chris Ryans, I believe their name were. They were introduced from Alabama. They did a Roll Tide Roll chant to get some cheap heat from the Baton Rouge crowd, and then Ryback comes out for our third match of the night, him killing these two jobbers in a minute and 59 seconds. That same basic stuff. He tossed them around, slammed them into each other, scooped up both of them for his muscle buster type finisher, and that was that. Then, you know, maybe I'm way off on this. There's been some serious debate in the forum about, you know, squash matches and whatnot, but here's my problem with Ryback. You've got, I like Skip Sheffield. I like his look. I mean, I'm a little unnerved by his look. It bothers me on some levels, but I think he's got that monster character down pat. He's very believable. He's good in the ring. If maybe a little too stiff at times, but this is going to get old fast. When you have guys like Damian Sandow beating Ezekiel Jackson, and guys like Antonio Cesaro beating Tyson Kidd, and you know, Heath Slater, and guys like that, guys you've at least heard of, and all Ryback ever beats is Joe Schmo, who weighs 155 pounds soaking wet with a brick in his pocket. It's going to lose its impact. Now, I freely admit I don't know who you put him with, because once he runs through the Tyson Kidd and the Ezekiel Jackson and that whole crew, I don't know what you do with him after that. So, I mean, I realize that this is not necessarily his fault. This is just kind of the situation that WWE has put themselves in. But, you know, does that make any sense? Is what I'm saying making sense, that him killing jobbers that you've never heard of, while everybody else is beating guys you have heard of in the same amount of time, begins to diminish him after a while, even if it is 2-on-1 handicap matchups?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on this one. I'm not a huge fan of the continued jobber beatdowns. I mean, I think it worked well for, a couple of weeks, maybe a month, but they're kind of getting to the second, maybe even third month of this now, and it just kind of feels like it's overstaying its welcome. You know, I'm not against, you know, jobber matches necessarily, or squash matches, for a couple of weeks to get a guy introduced on television and let people know what his moveset is and you know, things like that, things the cues to look for in a match, you know, when he starts moving up the card. You know, I get that part of it, but this just seems excessive now, you know, especially when you rightly pointed out that they have other talents that they've introduced. you know, beating names that people recognize from you know, WWE superstars or NXT or, you know, people who often wrestle on SmackDown and Raw. So, you know, it does look a little out of place when, you know, they spend so much time just introducing this guy as a killer. People that everybody else backstage, you know, surrounds the monitors to go out there and watch. And yet, you know, he is yet to progress past, you know, beating local guys who cut brutal promos. I mean, it almost feels like his gimmick right now is, you know, having a couple of jobbers go out there and cut really bad promos to get them, get the crowd to hate them so he can go out there and squash them. I mean, that's kind of what he's become. I don't know if you noticed this, but there was a couple of shots that Cole took at Independent Wrestling from the announce booth during this match. That, you know, while those jobbers were cutting their terrible promo, he's like, I have it on good authority that these guys are excellent representatives of the independent wrestling community, and that any independent wrestling promotion would love to sign these guys for big money right now. And it was just like, really? Like, was that necessary? That caught me off guard, too. It just kind of put me off. But I don't know if you even noticed it.
No, I heard him talking about independent wrestling, but they were giggling and shit before he even came out, and that I had already kind of tuned them out at that point. It was, I can't stand that. That's the way they just, you know, haul and, and laugh. It just drives me crazy. It's like, I realize he's killing these guys or whatever, and it's, you know, you're trying to get it over, but I don't know. The silly laughing just gets on my last nerve, and especially with Cole. He's still that ambiguously heel character, and it annoys me. He needs to pick one spot and stay with it. We've talked about it. He's been very good recently when he's not been trying to be a character, and I just want him to kind of go back to that. I'm completely done with heel Cole, so not surprised. Maybe you and I are in the minority, but I look at this and I see Cody Rhodes beat a guy, you know, beat Tyson Kidd in like a minute and 50 seconds or a minute 20 seconds, something like that, and you see Damian Sandow win and a minute and 30 seconds, minute 40 seconds, you know, and then Ryback wins in the same amount of time, but it's two guys you've never heard of, you never will again. Combined, they weigh less than half of it. You know, I just don't think it's effective. I think it loses its impact after a while, and you and I am throwing people around, but you don't necessarily want to see him in a feud because of this. You don't necessarily want to see him contend for anything because of this. So it's a great spectacle, but it doesn't do anything for the character at all, is where I think he is right here. After this match, we get the Raw rebound showing Big Show beating up Brodus Clay, Kofi Kingston, R-Truth at the end of Raw. After the video, Matthews runs down Brodus Clay's injuries from the assault. And I found it interesting he announced that Brodus Clay had a concussion about a week after, it was about a week ago, maybe less, that Randy Orton's punt was banned in WWE due to concussional awareness, is how he put it. And yet they're going to come out and announce a fake concussion. Did that jump out to you, or is that just me?
Well, yeah, I mean, it did jump out. I don't remember exactly, what would have caused the concussion on Monday. I don't remember any. Did he punch Brodus in the head?
Yeah, he hit him with a WMD on his knees.
Okay, yeah, that probably would have been what they're probably playing up. But then Show did it again tonight too, or last night too. So that was, yeah. I mean, it does seem kind of incongruous that they're gonna play up a concussion, and then Orton goes on Twitter and says that his certain moves are being banned because of concussional awareness. So yeah, I'm with you there. That is kind of bizarre.
Yeah, it was just, as soon as you said concussion, I thought, really? We're going to ban the punt, but then still give the WMD a concussion? That seems kind of strange. Vicky Guerrero kind of cut Josh Matthews off at that point, did her excuse me bit. She started to introduce Dolph Ziggler, but as you pointed out, that Ziggler's character seems to be evolving. He walked past her, snatched the mic from her hand, and said, tonight I beat the world heavyweight champion. He dropped the mic, his music hit, and he finished his entrance into the commercial. After the commercial, our fifth match of the night, I forgot the number of these, I believe it is our fourth or fifth match of the night, Sheamus defeating Dolph Ziggler in 13 minutes and 3 seconds. We did have another commercial kind of quick in the middle, towards the beginning of this match. Finish on this came where, Ziggler went for the zigzag. He had Sheamus. Ziggler had hit a kind of a facebuster off the top rope and for a great near fall. Then he went for the zigzag, but Sheamus kind of shrugged him off and hit White Noise. He set up for the bro kick, and Jack Swagger ran out, climbed up on the apron. Sheamus punched him, which allowed Ziggler to kick Sheamus from behind. He hit the rope and was going to hit the Famouser, but when he jumped, Sheamus shoved him into Swagger, knocking Swagger to the ground and kind of stunning Ziggler. Ziggler turned around and, of course, ate a bro kick for the pinfall victory. Part of me is frustrated that the White Noise move was enough to win the title defend the title at the pay-per-view, but here it's not enough. But I have to admit, the fan in me was looking forward to seeing Dolph Ziggler sell that bro kick, because as I've said a number of times, and it's a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true, that dude could sell ice to Eskimos in the ring.
Yeah, I see. I really enjoy Dolph Ziggler's song. I was going to say, I see people on our forum commenting that they think he oversells a lot of things. I don't get that necessarily. I think he's just out there, you know, doing the best selling that anybody in the company is doing, and maybe other people are underselling a lot of things by comparison. But I think he makes everything look great. But I thought the match was very good. You know, there were a lot of very good near falls in there. The White Noise you mentioned, the top rope face buster. There were a couple of good drop kicks from Ziggler. One that landed Sheamus on the announce table for a decent tease for a count out. And so there were a lot of good spots in this match. And I thought the finish. I wanted to see a Ziggler win here. I was actually kind of happy with the way it went down, because it furthers Ziggler's current story of blaming Vicky and Swagger for his continued bad luck in the ring. So I think they managed to accomplish quite a bit here. Sheamus looks very good going over a strong opponent who did take him, to the limit in the ring. And it sends Ziggler further down the line in his story evolution here. So I thought it was this is probably my favorite segment on the show.
Yeah, it's back to the night. I mean, I think it beats Punk and Kane at the end of the night, don't you?
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think we both agree. It's not a 5-star classic, but I would recommend going out of your way to see this match. It was very good. It's worth finding. It's a little under 15 minutes, and. It's worth every moment of sitting through, and I vehemently disagree about Ziggler overselling stuff. I mean, I guess it can happen. You can point to an isolated incident here and there, but I don't think you can put that in this match at all. Everything here just was very crisp and very nice, and the big thing I want for Ziggler is that as much as I want to see him take advantage of this Randy Orton suspension and be able to get some decent airtime, I want him at a feud that he can win. He needs to win a feud. He doesn't need to be the guy who steps in after Del Rio and faces Sheamus for a couple of months, just to have Sheamus go over. I think he needs a feud that he comes out of as the winner, and then maybe he can go into that feud with Sheamus. But I think he needs a little something here. Do you agree, or do you think he's ready for that main event spot?
I would prefer, like you, I would prefer that he be put into a feud for, a couple of months that allows him to look dominant. And maybe then, once you're, heading into SummerSlam, you can think about putting him in a title feud. I just think they haven't done enough to repair the damage that they've done since WrestleMania to his character, to throw him right back in with the Lions again. I think he needs something that's kind of a step up first.
Matt Striker is backstage with CM Punk and asked him about defending the title against Kane. Punk said that Little Johnny was making him face Kane because Ace didn't want the title on Punk. He just, he said because Punk was everything that Laurinaitis hated about the world, and that was fine with him because Laurinaitis represented everything he hated about the world. He put over Kane as being tough and having several cool nicknames, which he listed. He said he had one too, but it wasn't just a nickname. It was the truth, best in the world. And he said that tonight the best in the world makes the devil's favorite demon go to sleep. Good promo from Punk. He was a little bit paint by numbers, but good stuff, I thought.
Yeah, he delivered that well. Like you said, I kind of stole the words from him. I was just going to say kind of paint by numbers. It kind of felt like a very scripted promo, which is different from what we normally see from him. But for these backstage segments, it works. I mean, it was probably 45 seconds to a minute that he had, and he got a lot of his catchphrases in there, and you know, he managed to put over Kane for later in the show. So yeah, it accomplished what it set out to, even if it was a little bit maybe over scripted a bit.
The Slam of the Week video was Darren Young and Titus O'Neil defeating the Usos last week on SmackDown. Young and O'Neil were already in the ring. They didn't get an entrance, but that was because they had a cut-in video where they said Santini and Zachy or whatever they called them, so we've already beat you in prime time. And then they looked at each other knowingly and said, from now on you can call us the prime time players. Then they started doing their millions of dollars silly stuff that they do. Santino and Zack Ryder were out next for our sixth match of the night, Santino Marella and Zack Ryder defeating the primetime players, Darren Young and Titus O'Neil, in 1:16. This came on a surprise roll-up from Santino. They were beating up the faces. They whipped Santino into the corner. He went up and over on Darren Young and then flipped him back for a roll-up and a surprise victory. I was ready to start raging on my report. And then Big Show came out and killed Santino and Zack Ryder, literally. He slammed Santino into the WWE sign on the stage. He bounced Zack Ryder down the ramp a few times, slammed him into the stairs, took the bottom part of the stairs and walked him up on the ramp, slammed Zack on that, and then dumped him off. Carried the stairs, the bottom part of the stairs again, all the way up to the stage, slammed Santino on it, sat on his back on the steps and gave him the camel clutch, and then finally reached up, curled his hand into a fist and punched Santino in the side of the head and leave both guys laid out. Started screaming at the crowd, who's smiling now? What, you're not smiling? You're not smiling? The announcers laid out and it was just carnage and bodies everywhere. And you know, it was funny. By the time this was over, I was really okay with this. I was real upset that Young and O'Neil took the loss to Santino and Ryder. But by the time Big Show got done, nobody's going to remember that those guys jobbed to Santino and Ryder because Santino and Ryder got killed by Big Show afterwards. So it took all that heat away, which was a good thing. And quite frankly, if you're going to get, you know, this is kind of one of the situations where I don't want Big Show versus Cena. But if you're going to make me watch it, I like what they're doing with Big Show because usually he plays this angry, raging giant, and here it's this calm, calculated, killer-type guy, and which I like, which is a little bit different from everything we've gotten from him in at least the past 5-10 years. And so if we're going to get this, then I at least like what they're doing with Big Show here. And it was nice to see Santino and Zack Ryder just, you know what, we've seen Zack killed, but I'm so done with Santino. It was nice to see him laid out at the head of the Big Show.
Yeah, the match was over before it started, really. I mean, it was just that roll-up out of nowhere for the finish. But, you know, the beatdown was fun. You know, I like what they're doing with Big Show as far as, you know, just kind of turning over this new character. I mean, the beatdown kind of felt like it took place in slow motion to me. It just kind of took too long. But, you know, I did think they did a good job of, you know, cementing Big Show as this kind of calculated monster. And he's doing well with it. You know, he seems like he's actually kind of enjoying this role compared to what he was doing before. So I'm a fan of it. You know, it's the best Big Show we've seen, but I guess in my mind it's still the Big Show versus Cena, and I just can't escape the feeling that we've seen how this plays out before.
Yeah, it's a fair criticism. I just, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to swallow this even though I don't want to, and accept the fact that it's, you know, that it's Big Show versus Cena, and do the best I can with that. And you know, again, I think once you do that, then what you're left with is a pretty good match, or a pretty good Big Show character right now. It's been a lot of fun to watch play out. From there, I lost my place here. From there, we go to commercial. When we came back, we get a recap of Big Show's, a video recap of Big Show's assault on those two guys. We cut backstage to AJ, who was dressed in cut-up CM Punk garb and wearing his wristbands and everything. AJ Bryan walked up to her and asked what she was doing. He said that Punk was just using AJ. He didn't care about her. Punk thought that AJ was crazy just like everybody else did. AJ asked him why he cared what she did. He laughed and said, "I don't." And then he very tenderly ran his hands across her face and said, "But I used to," which is more than I can say for Punk, and turned around and walked off. Or no, she stormed off at that point. This was very short. I mean, maybe 30 seconds. But God dang it, it was great stuff. I mean, this is what they've been doing with her. They've been giving her these little segments. She's been doing them perfectly. Daniel's imperfect in them. And I honestly think it's the best story on WWE television right now.
Yeah, and I think if they gave them more rope, they'd probably hang themselves. So it's probably a good thing that they only get this much time. So it was shortened to the point, and it introduced, you know, the element that we've all expected would come through, which is that Brian is going to try to manipulate AJ again, and maybe Punk will too. And she's going to have to make the decision about who she's going to side with. So I think they're moving nicely along in that direction. And, I don't know if we're going to see that necessarily in the triple threat match. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. But it's definitely going to be the catalyst for this feud continuing on. So, yeah, definitely my favorite storyline in WWE right now.
So Jason presented this theory at in .NET Weekly, and I wanted to hear you groan about it too. Is it possible that we get the worst case scenario at the pay-per-view and AJ decides to side with Kane because they're both batshit crazy and Kane becomes the world champion?
Well, I guess it's not completely out of the question. I would hope not, just because it would be awful, and it would be just like the last time we saw Kane with a love interest on TV. I mean, if that's truly what this is building towards, but I don't think we're going to get that, but it would definitely be an eye roller, and I hope WWE knows better than that, but generally they don't. So I guess maybe Jason's premonition will come true, but if so, I'll just be muting those segments on television from then on.
I thought if that happens in the pay-per-view, our audio will be pretty much so be two hours of me screaming at him for booking that.
Yeah.
Christian had joined the announce team when we went back to the ring, and we got Cody Rhodes, his ring interest, Tyson Kidd already in the ring. Sixth match of the night, Cody Rhodes defeating Tyson Kidd in a minute, 21 seconds. We got a couple of quick moves, and then out of nowhere we get Crossroads for the Cody Rhodes win. Cody comes down the steps, Christian and he stare off, Cody walks back up the ramp, we go to commercial. I got nothing, Jake. This didn't move me one way or the other. It didn't bore me. It didn't entertain me. It just kind of happened, and then it was over, the least effective moment of the night.
Yeah, I mean, I think the introduction of Christian on commentary and the video package showing him winning the Intercontinental title might have been as long or longer than the match itself. And the match, I mean, Kidd, for whatever reason, didn't look terribly sharp out there during the match, and Cody won out of nowhere, and then they had the stare down that it was just not even. I mean, you heard Christian talking on commentary, and even that was boring. So yeah, and the whole thing just kind of bored me to tears. I was happy it was over as quickly as it was, because this feud, for whatever reason, just is not clicking with me yet. Maybe they'll do something to make it feel a little bit more personal and and actually introduce some story elements. But right now, it just kind of feels like, well, Christian won the title, and they just kind of feel obligated to have Cody feud with him now. But there's just nothing great about this yet.
Yeah, I've been sick for the past 4 days, and I've been chugging NyQuil, and I had some last night during the show, and I thought, did I hallucinate that? Was that a NyQuil moment? Because it was just bizarre. Christian wasn't very good on commentary. He looked weird when they were introducing him, and he was sitting there kind of grinning. He just kind of looked. Like, he looked crazed a little bit. I don't know. Just the whole thing was kind of a fail from start to finish, and then it was over. And I'm like, okay, maybe I hallucinated that. Let me check Jake's. No, it's in his report, too. I don't think we had the same hallucinations. So definitely the weirdest moment of the night. It just didn't work in another, minute-and-a-half match. I appreciate the fact that we got two 15-minute matches, but, to surround it with five other 1 minute matches is not really the way to go either. I think we should, maybe cut back a couple of matches and keep guys off TV for a week, and maybe that's the way to go. But whatever, we go to commercial, we come back, CM Punk makes his entrance, Kane makes his entrance, Lillian Garcia makes her introductions. And we were back to commercial. That was the moment of the night. We were like, wow, really? We get ring introductions and that's it. I mean, that was literally all it was. There was no video package. We came back from commercial, cult of personality, Kane's music. Here's your challenger. Here's your champion. Stay tuned for the World Heavyweight WWE Championship match. Back to commercial. Unbelievable moment. And then when we came back, our seventh match of the night, Kane fighting CM Punk to a no contest, or a double DQ, if you will, at 15 minutes and 48 seconds. A pretty good match, not as good as the one they had, I guess it was maybe 2 weeks ago, when all this kind of first started, the go-home show for the last pay-per-view, when Daniel Bryan got involved and hit Kane with a chair and had all that, and kind of got this whole storyline started. But still a pretty good match, and one worth watching if you're looking for something to do today. And I was wondering whether you should see this match or not. I think it's worth the 15 minutes to sit down and watch. The finish on this comes. Punk's got Kane on the mat. He climbs up to the top rope. Suddenly AJ's on the apron pointing towards the ramp. Punk, you know, sees her and looks at what she's pointing at. Daniel Bryan is running down the ramp. He dives on Bryan, punches him a few times. He climbs back up. He and Kane scuffle. He knocks Kane down with a roundhouse kick, finally hits the top rope elbow for a near fall. Kane fights right back and grabs for a choke slam. Daniel Bryan recovers at that point, climbs the top rope, and hits a missile drop kick on both guys to cause the double DQ, the no contest finish. Bryan starts stomping and kicking on Punk. Every time he stomps or kicks him, he screams, yes. Whips Punk into the corner, but Punk hits a clothesline and picks up Bryan for GTS. He turns around. Kane is there. He grabs Punk by the throat, grabs Bryan, who fell off of Punk's shoulder at that point, with the other hand, hits a double choke slam on both guys and rolls to the floor. As he begins to leave, that's when Laurinaitis comes out, makes the triple threat announcement, and we end the show. We talked about this a lot at the top of the show, so I don't have a whole lot more to add here. Again, I think it's a match worth watching if you're looking for something to do, if you're looking for some wrestling to watch. It's worth the 15 minutes. I enjoyed it. Again, not as good as the one 2 weeks ago. And one of the few times I'm really okay with a screwy finish, because it played well into everything they're telling. Whether you like the story or not is one thing, but as far as what they're doing, I thought it worked within the framework of what they're trying to do.
Yeah, you know, it was a competent match. Punk was good here. Kane is very good as a big man. You know, they work well together. You know, you're right. It wasn't as fresh or as good as their match a couple of weeks ago. Bryan's involvement was pretty, you know, predictable, and you know, they got where they wanted to go. I guess I'm not terribly ecstatic about the triple threat match. I think it'll be a good match. I guess the story elements are kind of lacking. I would have preferred, just to have those two have a rematch, but I understand that they want to try to extend this feud, and this is just probably the easiest way they could think to get there. So I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what they do with the title at the pay-per-view. You know, I think Kane, obviously, like we mentioned before, is the ball guy here. But I'm definitely interested in the AJ stuff with Punk and Bryan, so hopefully they can get past this little bump in the middle of the story and continue on with that next month, and we'll see something more exciting there.
So there is your SmackDown review, folks, for the SmackDown that aired June the 1st, 2012. Anything you want to add before we get out of here, Jake?
Nothing for me, no.
And Jake and I, of course, will be back next week with another SmackDown audio review. But if you want to get access to all the audio I mentioned, your Raw audio review, Impact Wrestling audio review, the .NET countdown, Jake and Will looking at the top and bottom of professional wrestling, or the best and worst, probably, better way of saying it, of professional wrestling each week, .NET Weekly every Thursday with Jason and I, breaking down the news of the week. Now is your time to sign up. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Get access to all that audio, the ad-free version of the site, the .NET members forum, and the .NET members blog page. Just $7.50 a month for 30 days, $5.50 a month if you take the annual option. Jake and I will see you back here next Saturday. Until then, everyone have a fantastic weekend, and take care.